You're not very good at this. No more getting dead.
As my armor carried me toward the surface in a cloud of bubbles, I could sense the feeling returning to my body. It was an awful, tingly pain. Combined with the screaming, air-starved agony in my chest and the explosive pain in my head, it was horrible. My legs began to kick, and my arms began to tear at the hard water, forcing myself ever faster toward the light and a breath of precious, precious air. My head broke the surface. I somehow gasped and filled my mostly liquid distended lungs and simultaneously violently vomited salt water. That hurt. Immediately, one of the fishermen started to wildly strike me in the helmet with a pole.
"Kill it! Kill it!"
one of them shouted. I tried to swat the pole away, but my limbs were still regaining their strength.
"Stop it! I'm human, you idiots!"
I croaked as they tried their best to shove me back underwater.
"He's on our side! Quit hitting him, damn it!" I heard Holly order. "Pull him in!"
I did my best to grab the end of the pole, and I was dragged to the brilliant mistake. Rough hands grabbed me by my harness and pulled me aboard, soaked, shaking, gasping, and still vomiting. There was sudden movement in the waves as one of the whites broke the surface and did a savage impersonation of dog paddling toward our boat.
"You can whack that one," I gurgled
as my numb fingers tried to grasp my still-secured shotgun.
"I've got it. Fire in the hole!"
Holly shouted. I heard a plopping splash, and a few seconds later a thunderous roar as the frag grenade detonated. The ocean erupted. Water and miscellaneous undead bits rained down on the little boat.
"That's the last of them," Holly reported. "Are you okay?"
I rolled onto my side and retched and coughed horribly. My chest was racked with spasms of pain, and I was seeing double.
"Yeah, I'm cool," I gasped.
"Sure. You're the picture of health. Come on, Z."
She tried to help me up, but I was far too heavy to budge. I struggled to my knees as she pulled at the drag handles on my armor. There was a large scorch mark on the hull of the Antoine Henri, with a small, jagged crater torn through the metal in the center. She saw me looking at the hole in puzzlement.
"What? You thought you guys were going to leave me down here with all of the cool stuff and I wasn't going to use any of it?"
She pointed at the spent RPG launcher lying on the deck. Next to it was the headless body of a still-twitching white. She had pinned it to the wooden deck with a boat hook.
"They need help up top," I said as she helped me to my feet.
I had to stop and vomit once again. It still hurt, but it was getting easier. That one had contained my dinner from the evening before. Nachos.
"I'll go. You stay here. The captain is casting off. They're going to get the hell away from this demon boat, but I can't say I blame them. They'll pull back and wait for our signal in case any more of those things come squirting out the portholes."
"I'm going," I stated.
"You almost drowned,"
she pleaded.
"And I didn't even get any mouth-to-mouth. We're wasting time."
I grabbed onto the ladder as the Brilliant Mistake's engine turned over with a cough and ejected a cloud of diesel smoke. Holly shook her head in consternation and grabbed the second ladder. We started climbing as the little boat pulled away. If I had thought that it was hard the first time, doing it after almost drowning was infinitely more difficult. My boots and armor were soaked, and had seemingly tripled in damp weight like giant Cordura sponges. Holly easily outpaced me. Her lighter weight and excellent muscle tone surely helped, and she went over the top first. Trip and Lee were waiting for me and helped drag my carcass the last few feet.
"Ugh,"
I grunted as I fell onto the deck for the second time.
"I hate that stupid ladder."
"It's easier than upside-down pole dancing, you sissy,"
Holly stated as she unslung her UMP. Surveying the deck, I could see that my companions had been busy while I had taken a little swim. Every white had been hastily chopped into its component bits. Some gray arms were still pulling themselves along, and a few severed heads were glaring and gnashing their teeth. The hind was still circling above us. Surprisingly, my radio still worked.
I popped a couple climbing up the other side. I think we're clear,
Julie's voice said.
No response from the assault element. I'm coming down.
The chopper stopped directly above us. A rope was thrown out the side, and Julie unclipped herself from her bungee cords. She expertly fast-roped down, dropping swiftly to the deck. As soon as her boots hit the surface, she was heading our way, helmeted head pointed down to avoid the harsh blast of the rotors. The hind immediately gained altitude and banked hard and away.
"He can stay for another 20 minutes, tops, then he needs to refuel," she shouted as she approached. "Is everybody okay?"
"Good to go,"
Holly stated. The rest of us nodded. I suddenly dry-heaved and went to my knees, coughing and choking. Once it passed, I shakily lumbered back up.
"Just peachy," I said, giving a big, cheesy grin and a thumbs up.
"Good. We're going in," Julie ordered.
She dropped the partially expended magazine from her accurized M14 and replaced it with a full one.
"Assault team has been out of contact for a few minutes. They probably need help. Let's move out."
She trotted toward the entrance to the belly of the beast. The rest of us followed obediently. It had been felt that the newbie team had not been ready for the brutal close-quarters battle that was monster hunting in a claustrophobic ship's interior. That didn't matter now. We were the cavalry, and we were coming to the rescue. At least Julie knew what she was doing.
"Take grenades, but be careful how you use them. We're going to be inside a steel tube. Back pressure from an explosion can kill. Don't hose shots. Everything ricochets down here. Watch your muzzle and be aware of where the rest of your team is. No flames. The ship is metal, but everything on board can burn, and a ship fire is bad news. If anything moves, and it isn't human, shoot it. Questions?"
Nobody said anything. We stopped in front of the massive metal door. Julie grabbed Holly by the straps of her armor and looked her in the eyes.
"It's going to be dark in there, Holly. Just like the hole. Are you going to be okay? You don't have to do this if you aren't ready." "I'm fine. I hate vampires. Let's kill these assholes," she replied angrily.
Julie nodded and smiled. I had no idea what that was about.
"We're going to move fast. We're not going to stack at each entrance. We're not going to do a full clearing. Keep moving. Watch above you, watch floor grates. Lee, you bring up the rear, watch behind us. I'm on point, then Pitt, Tripp, and Newcastle. Got it?"
"Let me take point," I suggested.
"Why?"
"I've got the shotgun. You've got a sniper rifle with a scope on it. Plus, I'm expendable. If you're in front and you die, then the rest of us are screwed."
I wasn't being chivalrous. For conversational distance, a shotgun beat the pants off of a long rifle with a magnifying optic. She thought about it for a moment, then nodded.
"Pit on point, then me. Any questions?"
It probably made more sense to put one of the other three with the suppressed subguns next in line, but I did not think Julie was real confident in their shooting abilities at that point. We were quiet, each of us preparing ourselves in our own way to enter the dark. Tripp was obviously mumbling a prayer. Lee had his eyes closed and appeared to be doing controlled breathing. Holly was wearing an evil, predatory grin. I made sure my shotgun and pistol were fully loaded, and my magazines and knife were in place. At least my quick dip in the ocean had cleaned most of the white juices off of me. The rest of the newbie team was coated in them. Julie slapped me on the back of my soggy armor.
"Go."
The first floor we covered was still lit with fluorescent lights, but by the time we hit the stairs for the next level down, we were forced to switch to our helmet-mounted night-vision binoculars. Something had systematically smashed every light. Glass crunched under our boots as we quickly made our way through the narrow steel corridors. I had a pair of lights on my shotgun, one a super bright white light, and the second cast a brilliant beam that was invisible to the human eye, but lit up the whole world in green through my monocular. The rest of the team was similarly equipped with infrared lights on their guns as well. Since we were fighting undead, the thermal imaging gear had been left on deck. It was not very useful against things that were already room temperature. We swiftly passed through what had been the galley. I kept the shotgun at the low ready, elbows tucked down to keep from banging them on the walls. Meals lay half-eaten and rotting on the tables. The walls were splashed with a thick fluid that was indeterminate through night vision, but my gut told me that it had once been bright arterial spray. I bumped into a wine bottle with my foot and sent it spinning under one of the tables. The doors were basically watertight hatches, and I had to step carefully over a steep ceiling lip on the base of each portal as I passed. So far, all of the hatches had been open. The crash of gunfire echoed through the corridors and ductwork. That was a good sign that our friends were still alive. My small team quickened its pace. According to the blueprints we'd studied on the way to the ship, we needed to go down one more flight of stairs, through some quarters, down a long corridor, and then we would be right on top of the engine room. We all flinched as an explosive whoomp vibrated the whole freighter and rattled the utensils in the galley.
"Bomb?" Tripp asked. "Hard to tell," Julie answered.
"I hope we don't sink," Lee grunted. Our boots rattled on the metal stairs as we double-timed it to the next level. The time for stealth had passed. I turned the corner into the crew quarters, light probing ahead, shotgun butt ground tightly into my shoulder pocket. The long, narrow room was filled with double bunks. Pornography had been crudely taped to the walls, and it looked strange in the glowing green light. Blankets and trash were strewn everywhere. It was a veritable warren of hiding places. Jerking my fist up, I signaled the team to freeze. I had sensed something. Julie drew against me, her rifle at the ready. I could hear her breathing. There was a clank as another member of our team tripped on the doorway. Something was in the room with us. I could feel it. Nothing happened. The group continued to shine our invisible lights around the room. I could not put my finger on what I was feeling, but something was waiting for us. Julie must have felt the same thing.
"Everybody, NVG's off. Go to white light," she commanded.
I flipped my monocular back and complied, pushing the button that activated the 120-lumen surefire light on the forearm of my 870. Brilliant, scalding light suddenly filled the room from five waving points. A night vision monocular has some advantages over a similar pair of goggles that cover both eyes, but it also has its disadvantages. On the plus side, with the single lens, one pupil will be fully dilated for natural human night vision, and the other eye will be looking at an already bright green world. The human brain, being the amazing thing that it is, superimposes both lighted and unlighted images together. You get electronically enhanced vision, with one eye still able to see as well as any human could in the dark if the device gets lost. With two-lens goggles, you have better night vision capability, but if your device goes out, you're pretty much screwed until your eyes adjust to the dark. Great as our monoculars are, there's a disadvantage inherent to them as well. When you suddenly flip on bright lights, one of your eyes is immediately blinded. So the five of us were down to one sort of functioning eye and one dazzled eye when the surefires kicked in. That was probably why the image of the vampire crawling down the ceiling toward us was extra surreal. As I had been told, it did in fact look like a normal person. This one looked like a regular sailor, pale and defying gravity, but human. I reacted a fraction of a second before the rest of the team. In that moment, I was able to pump two silver slugs through the vampire's chest and pelvis. The concussion of the shotgun was deafening in the confined space, but nothing compared to the sonic crack of Julie's M14. Her bullet clipped the vampire through the shoulder. The creature dropped to the floor, and both of us hit it again on the way down. The rest of the team did not have a clear shot through us. The vampire screamed inhumanly as Julie and I simultaneously dropped to our knees. The three newbies behind us opened fire over our heads. The suppressed weapons shuddered as 45 bullets stitched the creature, with plenty of other bullets missing and hitting the walls and bunks. It shook and staggered, but kept coming. Impact holes puckered in the monster's pale skin, only to instantly close. I emptied the rest of my slugs in a continuous burst, nailing the monster from the crotch to the forehead, the last shot snapping the vampire's head back violently. I dropped the smoking Remington, drew my handgun, and fired two shots before I was swatted aside. My body armor cushioned the blow, but I was hurled through the air and slammed into the steel wall. Pain surged through my ribs, and I lost my pistol on impact. Julie dropped down and rolled under a nearby bunk, narrowly avoiding the vampire's foot as it smashed an indentation into the metal floor. Illumination from five different flashlights pointing in strange directions created a hellish and confusing scene. The rest of my team emptied their subguns into the creature as it closed on them. Holly and Tripp started to reload, and Lee drew his knife and swung wildly. The vampire moved so quickly that it was hard to visually track. It sidestepped the blow, grabbed Lee by his arm, and tossed him across the room. I heard the smaller man skid roughly across the floor. The vampire was distracted from Tripp and Holly as heavy .308 bullets struck it in the feet and legs. Julie's cover was torn away as the sailor thing grabbed the bunk and ripped it from the wall, easily breaking the heavy bolts. It reached for her, but I got there first. I swung my Ganga Ram with all of the fury that I possessed. Somehow it sensed me in mid-swing and started to move. I had been aiming for its neck, but instead my blade sunk deep into its shoulder, breaking the collarbone and grinding out against the top of the monster's ribs. Black fluid sprayed everywhere, like a pierced hydraulic cylinder. Spinning away, the creature ripped my blade from my grasp. The vampire flew backwards and stuck to the wall like a spider. Screeching in anger, it reached up, grasped the hilt of the massive Nepalese blade, and drug it out of its back. The noise of steel scraping on bone was sickening. The blade dropped to the floor with a clatter. I heard the near-simultaneous dropping of bolts as Tripp and Holly got their UMPs back in action. Julie was reloading. Lee wasn't moving. I reached for a specialty 12-gauge round, dropped it into the open chamber of my 870, and ran the pump forward. The wound was already sealing. It hissed something obviously profane in French. "Parlez-vous this, motherfucker!" It leapt at me, launching itself like a demon frog missile. I brought the shotgun up and pulled the trigger as the muzzle contacted the vampire's chest. A regular breaching round is used by police to safely break the locks or hinges on heavy doors during raids, which fragments without endangering any bystanders. The 3-inch Magnum 12-gauge sintered magnesium tungsten breaching charge that I had just fired had been designed for blowing through hinges suitable for bank vaults. Milo had told me that, during testing, this special breacher had put a basketball-sized hole through a side of beef. The recoil was amazing, even by my standards. The noise was going to leave all of us with ringing ears for a week. The vampire's torso exploded in a black mist. The creature's momentum carried it into me. We both crashed to the floor, rolling and thrashing. Entrails were spilling everywhere. Its legs were kicking on the ground, but its top half kept fighting. I pushed it off as it clawed at me and rolled away. Tripp and Holly responded by pouring 2 full magazines of .45 caliber silver into the thrashing monstrosity, riddling it with holes. As soon as they ran dry, Julie charged the torso. She placed 1 heavy boot on the creature's neck, raised a sharpened stake high over her head, and, with a cry, slammed it through the evil black heart. A fountain of black ooze shot into the air, and the hideous shrieks pierced us to the bone. Julie was splattered, but undaunted. The vampire was twitching, but could barely move. She held her hand out.
Big knife!
Grabbing my Ganga Ram from the floor, I limped over. I handed it over hilt first. The knife was huge, but she was a strong woman. She swung it back with 1 hand like she was clearing brush with a machete, then struck. There was a thud, and the screaming finally stopped. The head rolled free. She kicked it in disgust.
Reload. There's more where that came from. Lee, you still with us?
Julie said. She wiped the knife blade on her leg and handed it back over, mouthing the word, thanks. She looked deadly serious, covered in vampire gore and illuminated by powerful flashlights.
I'm okay. Oh, damn,
Lee said as Tripp helped him to his feet. He sounded weak and raspy.
I think I broke a rib.
Take it easy for a sec. Holly, cover the other doorway. Keep it on white light. Our vision is shot and the lights disorient them.
That was disoriented? Tripp asked. I speed reloaded the shotgun. I did not dare load any more breaching rounds, since they were useless past contact distance.
Anybody see my pistol?
Lee handed it to me, scuffed but undamaged. I changed magazines and reholstered. The bunk I was leaning against had a picture of a sailor's wife and kids standing in front of the Eiffel Tower. I shined my light on the vampire's body. The flesh was slowly bubbling and melting into a tar-like substance, leaving only sticky bones. The eyeless skull appeared to be watching me.
So that's a master vampire. They aren't so tough, I said.
Julie surprised us all by laughing. It was a genuine sound of merriment, and was totally out of place in the splattered crew quarters. She paused in cleaning the slime off her prescription goggles long enough to look at all of us poor, befuddled newbies. She shook her head and smiled.
That was just a baby.
All of the newbies had some choice words at that. Holly swore so creatively that it was almost poetry.
Masters can move so fast you can't hardly see them. They can eat a stack of Bibles and wash it down with a lit Molotov cocktail. This guy was probably turned in the last week. Abnormally quick regeneration, but the more powerful the creator, the stronger the creation. Whatever started this mess was one bad son of a gun. It would have to be to create those whites to serve as daylight guardians, too.
Satisfied that she could see again, Julie pointed toward Holly and the passage to the engine room.
Owen on point again. Tripp, stay by Lee and help him if he needs it. Holly, you bring up the rear. If we come across more vamps, stop, then throw in some grenades first. All right, let's move.
I took my place at the door, light stabbing ahead, searching for targets. Julie took the second position. She spoke softly in my ear.
"Parlez-vous, Mother Effer?"
It sounded good at the time. I shrugged. "Hey, if we don't die in the next few minutes, are you doing anything for dinner tonight?" She thumped me in the shoulder to indicate that it was time to move out. I took that as a no. I moved quickly, the light from the flashlights behind threw my hulking shadow down the hall. I had pulled something in my leg in the struggle to flee the vampire. My head and chest ached from my earlier adventure in the water. My stomach and throat hurt from all of the heaving. My nerves tingled with adrenaline and terror-induced endorphins. I was still seeing purple ghosts in one semi-blinded eye, and I was covered in vampire juices. I was having a great time, and had never felt more alive. Finally, a voice came over the radio. It was Harbinger.
"Light's coming near the engine room. Who is it?"
"Hold your fire. It's me and the newbie team," Julie answered.
"Stop where you are. There's a mess of hostiles about 30 feet from your position through the door on your left. We're at the end of the hall on the other side of that. Why ain't you up top?"
It was good to hear Harbinger's voice. I pointed my shotgun at the indicated compartment. Anything that came through that portal was going to get a snoutful of buckshot.
"We lost radio contact after you got ambushed. The deck got swarmed with whites. We killed them, but the boat crew wasn't going to stick around, and the Hind was low on fuel. The newbies did good, only minor injuries. We decided to come find you guys. I thought for a minute we had lost you, Earl," Julie answered.
"Nope. But Boone lost a man. Roberts got swarmed in the ambush. We have some others wounded, but nothing critical."
It was bad. There had to be at least 20 vamps. And they rigged the lights to blow when they attacked. His voice sounded tired and ragged.
"That doesn't sound right. Undead don't coordinate," she said.
"These do. It was planned. We killed most of them, and the rest are holed up in that engine compartment. There are at least 5.
"Fire?"
Julie asked, sounding hopeful.
"Negative. Fuel storage is through there. Same with explosives. We set anything off in that room, and we're swimming home. Plus, the room that Darnay and his men are locked in is on the other side of where the vamps are."
"Plan?"
she asked.
"I haven't figured that out yet. We can go in shooting, but if we do, we might hit a steam line and cook us all, or we might hit the boiler and blow a hole in the bottom of the ship. Either way, we're running out of time. We got another coded message from the French hunters. The vamps are trying to break into their compartment. Wait a second."
I did not turn to look. I kept my muzzle on the door. We had a great position. Both groups of hunters could fire with impunity into the doorway, and the angles were such that the chances of ricocheting a shot into the other team were virtually nil. Tripp and Holly both squeezed around me so that they would have a shot as well. The injured Lee watched our backs, and Julie stayed on the radio. The walls and floor vibrated slightly from the powerful engine nearby. The air smelled of diesel and rubber and rust, and the faint copper smell of blood. While we waited for Harbinger to get back to us, I could not help but ask, "Did any of you guys know Roberts?"
"He was the tall, skinny, blonde guy on the boat," Tripp said. "Seemed like a good guy." "He was a great guy. Brave, a little crazy, but he was a dang good hunter," Julie told us. "Roberts has been with us since we restarted. First batch of newbies we had. He'll be missed. I think he had an ex-wife and some kids in St. Louis."
Harbinger's voice crackled in my earpiece.
"Sam says that he found something on the schematics. We're directly under the main cargo bay. There's an escape hatch there that leads into that engine compartment. Sam says that we can put somebody through it, and they can pierce a steam pipe in the vamps room and then close the hatch before they get cooked. The steam will fry the undead, or at least flush them into the corridor where we can blast them."
Won't that kill the Frenchman also?
Julie asked.
Sam doesn't think so. Might raise the temperature a little, but judging from the schematics, they should be fine. I'm sending Sam, Grant, and Meade up to do it.
What about Boone's team?
My team's a little occupied, Jules, Boone replied over the net. Your Uncle Earl neglected to mention that we have at least two more of the bloodsuckers pinned down by the shafts. One of them is the son of a whore that bit Roberts.
Roger that.
She released her mic.
Wait for the cookout.
I could place some claymores down the hall. Give them a surprise when they come running out,
Lee offered helpfully. Just like a former demo guy, always looking to blow something up.
No, we're too enclosed.
She was probably right, but judging by the number of projectiles these things could soak up, I sure was not looking forward to five of them heading our way at the same time. There had been an FN Mag machine gun brought on board from the Brilliant Mistake. I had left it behind since it was so long and unwieldy inside the tight confines of the ship. However, 200 rounds of belt-fed 308 full-auto firepower would have been great right about then.
I've got some smaller stuff. It should do the trick with minimal damage to us, but it'll turn anything that comes through that door into hamburger.
For emphasis, Lee patted a pouch that was clipped to his webbing.
I'm hurting pretty bad, so I don't think I could throw it far enough. But one of you guys could probably land it right outside that hatch. It's radio detonated.
Julie thought about it for a moment, and then nodded at Trip. Lee unclipped the pouch, opened it, made a few adjustments, zipped it back up, and handed it over. Trip gently bounced it in his hands a few times to test the weight. Then he underhanded it with perfect accuracy, landing it on our side, just in front of the targeted hatch.
Good throw, Holly said. I helped coach the girls' softball team, too. Slow pitch.
All of us gave him funny looks.
It was a small school,
he added defensively. Time passed. Harbinger informed us that the captive French were sending more messages. The vampires were slowly battering their way in, looking for fresh blood. Sam checked in to tell us that the three of them were almost in position. Boone's team was down to four, and two of them were injured, and they had problems of their own. Harbinger and Milo were in position, but since there were only two of them, they were in for trouble if all of the vampires headed their way. We were spread awfully thin. It was going to be tight.
This is Sam. We're in place. Main cargo bay appears empty. But there's a mess of Konex containers up here. It's hard to tell. We're going to pop the hatch. You should know if this works. Over.
Go get them, cowboy,
Julie whispered under her breath while tightening the grip on her M14. We were positioned so that anything stepping into the hall was going to get a big surprise. A bit of high explosives, and four of us that were able to provide direct fire. Julie and I were even pretty decent shots. Who was I kidding? I was pretty good, but from what I had seen up on the deck, she was amazing. I glanced surreptitiously her way. Her brown eyes were focused through the lens of her ACOG scope. Her gloved finger was resting easily just alongside the trigger guard. She was leaning against the steel hull to steady herself. Her features were strong, and somehow she was still attractive in her relatively unflattering green body armor, despite the scratches and slime all over her face. Julie Shackelford was the girl of my dreams. In the distance, the sound of banging metal could be heard, and then a rapid series of gunshots and another clang of metal on metal. Trip was prone on the floor, so he felt the vibration first.
"Here we go," he shouted.
A metallic screeching tore at our ears as a wall of white vapor poured out of the open hatchway. The noise was a bastardized version of the world's greatest and most terrifying teapot. Even from where we were, the temperature rose dramatically as the scalding mist began to fill the hallway. Just under the onslaught of noise could be heard other equally inhuman screams, this time from the engine compartment's resident vampires. Something moved in the hatchway. First one, then two, and finally a third vampire stumbled into the corridor. The steam was boiling their fluids and peeling their flesh far faster than they could regenerate. One of them turned malevolently toward us with blind, molten eye sockets and screamed.
"Hit it, Lee!"
Julie shouted. Our demolitionist librarian complied and compressed the clacker in his gloved fist. The small charge detonated. The explosion was more of a muted thump than the expected fireball. In the open, Lee's little bomb might not have been very impressive, but in the narrow metal space, the energy of the C4 tore through the undead. Their bones were smashed into powder, and their bodies were disseminated into their component materials. We were 30 feet away, but we were still peppered with a fine mist of vampire. Two more creatures spilled from the hatchway, just having missed the bomb. One moved in our direction, the other turned toward Harbinger and Milo. 6 weapons opened fire. The creature heading our way was blind, burned, and torn. Some of its internal organs had expanded under the intense, wet heat, and the creature appeared lopsided and ungainly. Our bullets tore into it, rupturing through fluids and tissues, breaking bones, and spilling the vampire's unnatural life onto the floor. It fell to its knees under our onslaught, dragging itself inexorably toward us. One scalded claw was torn completely off by my last round of buckshot, and it still somehow continued trying to pull itself on its one functioning limb. It fell silent as we ran our guns dry. My ears were partially protected by the high-quality earpieces, but even with that my head swam from the barrage in the tight, echoing chamber. No gunfire could be heard from the other hunter's position.
"Earl, come in, Earl. Are you okay?"
Julie dropped her spent M14 mag and inserted another, letting the bolt fly forward to chamber another round.
"Can you hear us?"
"Got it. Our vamp is down.
We're coming around the corner to finish ours. Hold your fire."
"Roger that."
The vampire was torn asunder, but already it was beginning to heal. This time, Tripp and Holly did the honors while I covered them. Holly put her boot down on the creature's spine and slammed a stake through its back with a vengeance. This vampire was too damaged to scream. Tripp grimaced as he pulled out his hatchet. I suppose that the correct term was tomahawk for the Vietnam-era weapon that he had picked out of the armory. My friend raised the little axe and brought it down swiftly. The vampire had been shot through the neck so many times that it did not take much effort. The tomahawk slipped through with enough force to raise sparks on the floor. Immediately the tissue began to dissolve and drip through the grating, leaving only a black, damaged skeleton with abnormally long teeth. The noise of the escaping steam died off as the ship's emergency systems took over, shutting down the boilers and locking down specific valves. The white mist in the hall slowly dissipated. The temperature had risen at least 20 degrees, and I could feel the sweat rolling down my body.
"Julie, that should be all of these. When it cools down enough, get in there and rescue Darnay and his men. Milo and I are going to help Boone."
"Roger that, Earl."
The newbie squad waited patiently. Lee was hurting bad, and Tripp was doing his best to help the smaller man walk.
"Are you going to make it?" Julie asked him softly. "We grab the French and we head back up top. We should be almost out of undead."
"I'm just having a hard time breathing, is all," he grunted.
"Whatever doesn't kill us only makes us stronger," Tripp stated solemnly.
"Remember that when I'm kicking your ass later."
Lee laughed, and then grimaced in pain. The vampires that had fallen prey to Lee's bomb were reduced to pulp and bones. There was not even enough left to put a stake through. As I entered the engine compartment, the intense heat made my head swim. The air was thick with damp, hot vapor. A bit of residual steam hissed from the giant ruptured pipe that Sam had shot. Water dripped from everything. It was as if it was raining from the ceiling. The room was like a sauna, only worse, as all of the exposed metal pipes and fittings were hot enough to burn us. I could feel the heat of the floor through my boot soles. I took another swig from my Camelback. The room was lit by red emergency lights. I turned off my flashlight to retain my batteries. Overhead, water dripped from the ladder and the hatch that led to the main cargo bay. I paused in front of the heavy metal door that held the French survivors. I tried the wheel. My gloves provided enough protection to touch the metal, but not for long. It was stuck. I pounded on the door. The fist falls echoed loudly.
"Anybody know Morse code?"
I asked. Everybody shook their heads in the negative. Not a whole lot of former Eagle Scouts on my team. Julie shoved past me and struck the butt of her rifle against the door.
Dum-da-da-dum-dum.
Shave and a haircut. We waited a few seconds.
Dum-dum,
came the response. 2 bits. The wheel began to turn. I sighed in relief and tried in vain to wipe the sweat and moisture from my face. I could hardly wait to get out of this sauna. The door opened. The famous French hunter Jean Darnay stood before us, tall and imposing in his black body armor that differed only slightly from our own. He was a legend. Considered one of the greatest hunters the Europeans had, he had hunted more monsters in more places than probably anybody but Earl Harbinger. His team was well respected, and he was considered by many to be the best of the best. He was also currently dead, as were the 4 other members of his team standing to his side.
"We have been waiting for you," the vampire said.
Chapter 9. None of us moved. The vampire and his 4 whites stood separated from the hunters only by 1 narrow doorway. Julie and I were closest. For some reason, the vampire did not move. The whites made chewing motions and stood tensed, ready to pounce. Their red eyes studied us hungrily. They were all wearing the same black body armor. Darnay smiled at us, showing off his elongated incisors. He absently rapped his knuckles on the metal hatchway. S.O.S.
"Well, if it is not little Julie Shackleford. My, how you have grown up," Darnay said. "You're the image of your mother, an absolutely lovely woman. What a pleasure."
"The pleasure is all yours, Jean," she answered.
She shifted her rifle slightly. The 2 of us were blocking the doorway. The undead were close enough to smell. I did not think I could move fast enough to get away. It would only take a single touch from one of those whites to end up paralyzed.
"Now, now, little girl, do not try anything hasty. The only thing holding back my men is my will. They are bonded to me. If I lose concentration for an instant, your team is doomed."
He would have been a very handsome man when he was alive, suave and distinguished with just a touch of gray at his temples and in his thin mustache. His English was impeccable. I'm sure he could have been quite the charmer, except for the whole evil vampire thing and the 4 undead pit bull equivalents standing beside him.
"So why didn't you make your move? You could have just charged us immediately and taken us by surprise."
I could tell Julie was stalling for time, but I wasn't sure exactly what she was hoping for.
"Americans have no flair for the dramatic. You are almost as bad as the Germans. No romance in your souls. Always straightforward.
He snapped his long fingers.
I want to make a deal.
We don't deal with vampires,
she stated flatly.
But you have made deals with monsters before. The truth of that is undeniable. I want to make a deal with you. I will let you live, and I will give you important information in exchange for safe passage from this ship after sunset.
Except the monsters that we have made deals with don't leave a trail of bodies wherever they go. I can't do that to the world.
Julie spoke softly. One of my teammates moved slowly behind me.
So naive, girl. Your father would be ashamed. He was such a practical man. He would make a deal with the devil for the right cause. Order your man to stop what he is doing, or I release the whites. You don't want to try to toss a grenade in here. There are thousands of gallons of fuel and vapor in these pipes. You would kill your whole team, and the others as well.
Julie shook her head.
No explosives. Okay, Jean. Let's talk. But leave my parents out of it.
Fair enough.
The movement behind me stopped. The vampire continued.
Your team will go to the bridge, pull up the anchor and set course for the mainland. Then you will leave the ship.
How do you know we won't walk out of here and just sink the ship?
Julie asked.
Because I will keep you as a hostage. Your uncle is running this operation. He will do anything to protect you. I will let you go free when we run aground.
Julie laughed coldly.
And I'm supposed to believe you? You would bite me as soon as the helicopter lifted off. Screw you, Jean.
Now, young one, please. I did not choose this path, but I am a survivor. I just want to live.
If you can call that living.
Do not be so quick to judge. You of all people must wonder about this life. It is marvelous. I fought the darkness for so many years. I did not know what I was missing. I can see everything, Julie. I can feel your pulse from here. I can feel the world, the heartbeat of the very world. It is ecstasy.
The vampire was beginning to wax poetic. I had to try something.
Hey, John, I interrupted. The girl's hard-headed. I'm willing to talk business.
Your standards are slipping.
When did MHI start hiring gorillas?
The vampire asked wryly, glancing in my direction. His red eyes bored into me.
Owen, what are you doing?
Shut up, I snapped at her. I don't want to die here. You can keep the girl. I'll go up and pull up the anchor and point this barge at Florida. Old man Earl isn't going to want anything to happen to this chick. We will leave.
A sensible one. You must be new, yes?
Yeah, I'm just a mercenary. I'm just in this for the money.
I lied. Moisture dripped onto my helmet and rolled hotly down my spine.
Ah, good.
The vampire steepled his fingers.
Now you said you had some valuable information? So what are we talking about, Frenchie? Valuable means something I can use.
I had no idea if vampires were good judges of character.
I can tell you about the six old ones and their leader. They are on your country's soil now.
And what about the cursed one?
I ordered. The four whites shrieked in chorus. Darnay cringed.
How do you know of Lord Machado?
The vampire hissed the name.
Me and him are old pals. Now, if you want the girl, I want to know what he's here for.
Very well, then. But it is your doom. Lord Machado has the artifact. He will take it to a place of power, and he will use it. You cannot stop him. No mortal can stop him.
Look, Jean, I don't want to stop him. I just want to make sure I end up on the winning team. Know what I mean?
The vampire smiled. I can help you, then. You do not want to be on the wrong side when Lord Mashado rules. Do we have a deal? Julie interrupted angrily.
Owen, what the hell are you thinking? No deals with vampires. He'll kill me as soon as you walk out the door.
Shut up, bitch, I snarled. I move very fast for a big man. In the next second, I dropped my shotgun, letting the sling catch it. I lifted my right hand as if I was going to backhand her. Julie's eyes widened in shocked surprise. The vampire's eyes followed my uplifted hand as my left hand lifted a grenade off of my webbing. I brought my hands together smoothly. Instead of throwing my fist, I stuck my finger through the safety pin and pulled. The sound of the pin landing on the steaming floor was exceedingly loud.
Run, Julie. Run now.
I held the live grenade up next to my face. The only thing keeping the grenade from exploding was the thin, spring-loaded metal spoon that I was holding down with one finger. If I relaxed my grip, the fuse would ignite. 5 seconds later, it would explode and possibly ignite the engine room in a massive explosion. Julie did not say anything. She nodded and then retreated. The rest of the team followed quickly. I shouted one final instruction.
Get ready to abandon ship! You idiot!
The vampire roared. The whites hissed and thrashed in unison.
You will destroy us all!
Better my way than yours, you snail-eating bastard. I started slowly backing away. The whites exploded from the room and spread out in a skirmish line, snapping and clawing at the air. Jean Darnay stepped through the portal and strode forward. In the residual steam and in the red emergency lights, he looked like the traditional versions of the devil. So this must be hell.
Give me the grenade, he ordered.
Darnay locked his eyes on mine. Shivers ran down my spine, though the room temperature was running around 130 degrees.
Oh, I'll give it to you all right. I compel you. Hand me the grenade, safely.
The red eyes bored into mine. The words repeated themselves in my conscious mind and burrowed into my subconscious like tendrils. I felt myself starting to comply. The whites began to inch closer. My vision began to darken.
No!
I shouted, shaking my head wildly. The whites shrank back.
You have a strong will, ape-man, but it won't do you any good. Give me that grenade. You do not want to die.
Neither do you. Stay back!
I waved the grenade in front of me. A pound of high explosives was my holy symbol.
Maybe I should just take it. I am greater than you can understand. The greater the creator, the greater the creation. My creator was the greatest of them all.
Darnay's devil visage continued to advance.
If you think you're fast enough, come and get it.
I backed into something solid, the escape ladder leading to the cargo bay, 40 feet of iron rungs standing in the middle of the crowded room between me and safety. I knew that Darnay would never let me make it to the corridor.
You're not leaving me with any choice, human,
the vampire hissed. He stopped less than 10 feet away. His whites stopped alongside of him, two on each side. There was about a yard between each of the creatures. An image of black steel plates popped unbidden into my mind. It had to be fate. I kept my left arm extended with a grenade. I reached down with my right and grasped the stock of my shotgun. I had fired this gun hundreds and thousands of times, practiced until my fingers had bled and my shoulder formed thick recoil calluses. My father, the ruthless perfectionist, had driven me hard when it came to shooting, because he sensed that I had a gift
and would not settle for anything less than perfection in his sons. The wood was worn smooth under my glove. The Remington glistened darkly with moisture from the steam. I brought the butt into contact with my shoulder. My life came down to this instant. I needed to beat my record.
Catch!
I tossed the grenade to Darnay. The spoon released with a metallic sproing, igniting the fuse. The vampire moved as a blur to snatch the grenade out of the air. The whites mindlessly tracked the moving object. For me, time ceased. The gun and I were one seamless melding of man and machine. The safety was released as my finger knowingly sought the trigger. The muzzle rose perfectly. The trigger was pulled. The sear released. The hammer fell. The firing pin struck the primer. The powder burned. I was bringing the muzzle onto the second white's head before the buckshot struck the first. Fire. Work the action. Repeat. 5 shots. Faster than I had ever gone before. The fusillade was a continuous roar without pause. I did not miss any of the 5 undead craniums. Dropping the shotgun onto its sling, I grabbed the ladder and started to climb as fast as I humanly could. I did not wait to watch for results. I heard thuds as some of the whites fell to their backs or collapsed to their knees. Darnay had been a monster hunter for longer than I had been alive. He knew what to do with live ordnance in a bad place. He had caught and then immediately launched the grenade with a pitch that would have made any major league pitcher proud, right through the doorway and into the corridor. He did that even as my silver buckshot pellets penetrated his skull. The grenade hit the corridor wall and rolled away, now belching orange signal smoke. It was a harmless smoke grenade. Darnay screamed as the silver burned him.
Kill him! Kill him!
2 of the whites shrugged off their shattered skulls and damaged brain tissues, leapt to their feet, and charged. The first began to climb after me as the second jumped onto one of the engines and began to climb up the metal surface like a spider. One white had its eyes put out and stumbled blindly for the ladder, searching for me by smell. The last had its spinal cord severed and was flopping wildly as random impulses fired from its undead brain. I climbed as fast as I could, legs pumping, arms grasping and pulling with all of the desperate strength I could muster. The whites were far faster. I was halfway up the ladder when the first white clawed at my boot. Grabbing the shotgun, I fired a single round straight down between my feet. The creature's hand exploded on impact, and it fell toward the ground. The blind white quickly took its place, scurrying after me. The wall crawler matched my pace and launched itself at the ladder. There was barely time to swing around to the other side as it crashed into the slick steel bars. I dangled over the floor as it wildly tore at me. One paralyzing touch, and I was dead. I swung the shotgun like a club, smashing the white in the face. It tore my weapon away, ripping through the sling as it fell to the deck. I slipped on a wet rung, and then forced myself to start climbing again. Darnay caught my Remington in one hand. He expertly pumped the weapon, aimed it at me, and fired. The buckshot slammed into my armored chest, knocking me back. I grunted in pain, but the silver pellet stopped against the woven Kevlar. My glove slipped on the wet steel, and I toppled backwards in flailing panic. My knee wrenched painfully as I crashed upside down into the ladder. I hung suspended, my boot wedged under one rung and my bent knee over the top of another, like an insane trapeze artist. The blood rushed to my head, and I watched as Darnay pumped the shotgun, aimed it right between my eyes, and pulled the trigger. Nothing. The click was the loudest sound in the world. That had been my 7 shots. The blind white surged upwards, sensing my warm blood. Still facing down, I